Hello and welcome to the Respiro podcast. I'm Joe Bishop and this is just our second podcast. And in these first few, we are introducing people to Respiro, what we're all about, who we are. And we want to talk about some of our core principles and truths and values that undergird our organization and give us a framework for why we do what we do. Respiro is a nonprofit organization that provides counseling at no cost to individuals and groups and couples. And we also provide some teaching on healthy relationships, and we do training for people who feel like they want to be involved in that kind of ministry. We're here in Santa Cruz, California, and we operate in Santa Cruz County and other places in the San Francisco Bay Area. Life is hard and challenging, and people are hurting. And one of the things that we believe very strongly at Respiro is that nobody should struggle alone, that nobody should have to deal with the many challenges that life can bring us by themselves. And so we want to provide a safe place for people to be able to talk about what they're struggling with and have somebody who will listen and give them support and encouragement and wisdom and do that without a financial burden. Now, we are a faith-based organization. We believe that the essence of human flourishing and wholeness is found in following Jesus, and we're very open about that, but we provide help and counseling to whoever seeks it. And so we, again, just very much have this conviction that nobody should struggle alone. I was listening to a TED Talk just the other day by the founder of Jacob's Heart, which is another nonprofit here in Santa Cruz. And the founder of Jacob's Heart was talking about a mom whose very young son had cancer. And that's what Jacob's Heart is doing. They are supporting families where there's a child with cancer. And this mom was saying how she had heard that God won't give us more than what we could handle. But she really had a hard time believing that, especially after her son got cancer. But then, because other people came into her life and helped and supported and surrounded her with love, she said, I believe that it's true. God doesn't give us more than we can handle as long as we don't have to handle it alone. And that really struck me, and that's very much what we believe here at Respiro. Now, it's heartbreaking when, you know, cancer hits a family, especially with a child. And that's a visible thing. That's public. It can't be hidden, really. But many people are dealing with things that are invisible, that nobody would know that they're struggling with. And that's why to have somebody to talk to is so important. People are dealing with crippling anxiety or shame or regret or deep disappointment in relationships or addiction or abuse or the effects of abuse. And that might be something that they've never really talked about or told anybody else. So we want to really make it possible for people to have support and encouragement with whatever's going on in their life. And we believe that these kind of conversations are just part of growth and transformation. We talked in our last episode about how one of our goals is to help people be and become better lovers. So it's not just about helping people feel better, although we certainly hope that happens, but it's also about helping people live the lives that they were created to live and be the people that they were created to be. And again, we believe that following and living in the way of Jesus is central to this. In the Bible, it talks about Jesus as the source of life. It says that in him was life. And the Bible talks about how Jesus shows us what God is like, how he thinks about us, how he relates to us, how he wants us to relate to him. And so that's very much at the center of what we believe and how we try to help and encourage people. So today in this podcast, I want to talk about just the story of one person's kind of encounters with Jesus. And we want to engage with that emotionally as much as we can and kind of put ourselves in that story to see, yeah, what that's like, how Jesus does respond to a person who's struggling. And in this case, a person who has failed dramatically, who has failed publicly, and who is overcome with regret and remorse and shame about what he's done. And then see how Jesus responds to him. And just as a way to understand that that's how Jesus would respond to us, does respond to us, when we've also failed, when we've done things and said things or not done and said things that we deeply, deeply regret. And so this is the story of Peter. And if you're familiar with the Bible, of course, you're probably somewhat familiar with Peter and who he is. He shows up very early in the Gospels, which tell us the story of Jesus and his public ministry, his life, his death, his resurrection. And in the Gospel of John, very early in that Gospel, Jesus meets this man for the first time. And he's actually... his name is actually Simon. That's a Hebrew name, of course. And Simon has a brother, Andrew, who has met Jesus. And so Andrew wants to introduce his brother Simon to Jesus, and so he does that. And it's interesting, it says in the Gospel of John that Jesus meets Simon. And it says, Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, son of John, but from now on you will be called Cephas," which actually, when translated, is Peter. And so that's why we know him and think of him with the name Peter. Saint Peter, he's come to be known. But Peter's actually a nickname that Jesus gave him. It means rock. It means literally, so it's a nickname, Rock or Rocky. And so in this first encounter with Simon, who from now on I'm just going to refer to as Peter, what Jesus says to him is, "Follow me," to Andrew and Peter and another man named Philip. He says, "Follow me," and gives him this invitation to follow him and know him and go through life with him and be a disciple. Jesus is a rabbi, and so to be his disciple. And then we have stories of throughout the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, of during the next few years of Peter and the other disciples, but especially Peter, some of the things that happened. And we see Peter as a man who has a lot of gifts, probably, a lot of personality, a lot of leadership ability. We see him as a man. He's a young man, by the way. He's late teens, early 20s. So don't think of him, as he's often depicted in art, in paintings, as a middle-aged man with a gray beard. He's still a very young man at this point. And he does a lot of things that seem impetuous. He talks a lot. He is a guy who a lot of people can relate to because he puts his foot in his mouth and he does things that get him in trouble, but he's kind of endearing too. And I want to particularly talk about what happens at the end of the Gospels, the end of Jesus' public ministry, And so I want to go to a place in actually the book of Mark, and this is on the night before Jesus is killed, before he's crucified. And he's having a last meal with his friends, with his the group of men that he's lived with and taught for several years now. And he's as he's sharing this meal with them, he talks about what's about to happen. And he even says that how difficult it's going to be. And he predicts, he says, "You will all fall away," Jesus told his disciples. And Peter says, when he hears this, he says, "I'm not going to fall away. Even if all fall away, I will not." So basically, Peter's saying is, "Hey, all these other guys may disappoint you or bail out when it gets tough, Jesus, but I won't. I would never do that." But Jesus says, "I tell you the truth, Peter, today, yes, tonight, before the rooster crows twice, you yourself will disown me three times." But Peter insisted emphatically, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And all the others said the same. Yeah, no, we would never do that, Jesus. But Peter makes a big statement about how he would never fall away or run away just because things would be getting tough. And he even says that he would stick with Jesus even if if it meant his life would be in danger. That he would stick with Jesus to the bitter end. So he makes this bold statement, and I don't know what was going on with him emotionally. Maybe when he hears Jesus say that, this is just a genuine, he really thinks this. He thinks he can do this. He thinks that he has what it takes to be loyal to Jesus no matter what. And that's what he wants. That's what he believes. But it's a, you know, it's a kind of boastful too. And you wonder if all the other disciples hear this and are kind of resentful or a little. We know that they could be competitive and that they didn't all just always get along wonderfully. So they feel like, well, Peter said it, I guess I have to say it too. It's kind of it's a very dramatic scene. And then it goes on in, especially in this story as Mark tells it, that they leave this dinner and they go to a place called Gethsemane, which is a garden or an olive grove just outside the city walls of Jerusalem at that time. And Jesus, this is late at night, and Jesus is struggling. He knows what's about to happen, and he's apprehensive. And the famous scene where he prays that God will remove this cup. But as he's praying, before he started praying, he asked his disciples, and especially three of them, Peter, James, and John, to just kind of stay with him and pray with him. And he's very vulnerable. He talks about how he's struggling. And so, you know, Peter is asked directly by Jesus to pray and support him, and he can't do it. He falls asleep. And so we have immediately following the scene where Peter has just emphatically talked about how he would never fall away from Jesus. He falls asleep, he disappoints Jesus, and Jesus kind of comes back three times and makes that same request. So Peter is sleepy and tired probably, but he can't really fulfill what Jesus is asking him to do. And then the soldiers come to arrest Jesus. And we know that Peter gets kind of worked up, and he even pulls out a sword and takes a swing at one of the soldiers and slices the guy's ear off. I don't know if that's a proof of how good a swordsman Peter was or how bad a swordsman he was, but and Jesus kind of tells him, "Put your sword away, Peter," and he heals the guy's ear, and then the disciples scatter. They run away out of fear and out of this sense of they don't want to get arrested, and they're probably confused and not sure what's going on, but they run away, including Peter. But we know that Peter then follows Jesus from a distance, and Jesus is taken to the high priest's home, and he's questioned and roughed up, and Peter, along with at least one of the other disciples, John, goes into the courtyard outside of where Jesus is being held, and Jesus is being questioned and interrogated and slapped and beaten. So Peter, yes, he runs away initially, but then he also follows. And in the Gospel of Luke, it tells us that Peter's followed at a distance, and they've got a fire going in the middle of the courtyard outside the chief priest's house, and there are people sitting down around there, and Peter kind of comes in and sits down with them. And it says in Luke that a servant girl saw him seated there in the firelight. She looked closely at him and said, "This man was with Jesus." But Peter denied it. "Woman, I don't know him," he said. And then some time passes, and a little later, someone else saw Peter and said, "You also are one of them," meaning one of the group of Jesus' followers. "Man, I am not," Peter replied. And then another hour passes, and another person asserted, "Certainly this fellow," pointing at Peter, "certainly this fellow was with him, for he's a Galilean." They could tell from Peter's accent, probably the people from Galilee had a distinctive accent that was different from people in Jerusalem. And Peter replied, "Man, I don't know what you're talking about." Just as he was speaking, the rooster crowed. The Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word the Lord had spoken to him, "Before the rooster crows today, you will disown me 3 times." And Peter went outside and wept bitterly. So there's this dramatic scene where just as Jesus is being led out and he's being taken to Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor of Judea, Jerusalem at that time. And Peter denies that he even knows Jesus for the third time. The rooster crows, and just then Jesus is being led out, and he turns and he looks at Peter. Their eyes meet, and Peter can't hide. Peter knows what he's done. He knows that Jesus knows what he's done, that he has failed. He's done exactly what he said he wouldn't do, and that is he has fallen away, denied that he even knew Jesus. And I don't think we should think of this as a failure of faith on Peter's part, but more as a failure of courage. And just, he's scared. He's scared of what would happen to him if he admitted to being a follower of Jesus, that he might be arrested also and whatever else might follow. But after his boast, just hours before, he has failed. And it's major, major failure. And he can't hide from it. It's public. John, at least one of the other disciples, is there and hears it too. But most importantly for Peter, Jesus knows it. And Peter knows that all his boasting and all his big talk, that he couldn't back it up, that he has failed. He has let Jesus down and denied that he even knows him. So just imagine what that's like. And maybe we can. Maybe we know what it's like to just miserably fail another person. To let somebody down in a deep way. And it says that Peter wept bitterly. And can you imagine then throughout that day as Jesus is crucified, there's no mention, there's no record that Peter was at the crucifixion, that Peter was able to even be present, that he's so filled probably with remorse and maybe still fear that he can't face seeing Jesus or being in Jesus' presence. And part of that's probably just the seeing Jesus being crucified and this person that he's put all his hopes in, all his life in for the last few years. And it's ending and it's over and Jesus dies. And then that night and the next day on Saturday, what that would have been like for Peter. Just guilt and shame and grief, grief that his friend is dead, grief that this dream, this promise, this idea that of Jesus bringing in the kingdom of God, that the disciples misunderstood how Jesus was going to do that, but just the grief of somebody you love has died, and it's died a tragic, brutal death. Everything you've been hoping for and dreaming for and living for is over. Feels like it's just over. But it's even worse than that because it didn't end well between Peter and Jesus. It ended, the last thing that happened between them was that look that Jesus gave Peter. And I'm sure it was not a look of filled with anger or anything but love. But still, it was just as Peter had denied Jesus and the prediction that Jesus had made had come true. And Peter has to somehow deal with that on Saturday and just knowing that he had failed utterly and miserably. And so that's why the next morning, when some women come to where the disciples are staying and hiding and say that Jesus' body is not in the tomb, that Peter jumps up and runs to the tomb. He is so eager to see if it's true, so wanting it to be true, I'm sure, wanting there to be a sense that Jesus might somehow be alive. And he races to the tomb, and sure enough, Jesus' body isn't there, and there's just this wild hope. And then later that day, Jesus appears to the disciples in his resurrected body, and he talks to them, and he interacts with them. And this happens a few times over the course of the next few days and weeks, actually. And I want to go and I want to look at the interaction that Jesus had with Peter personally after his resurrection. It's a story that's told at the very end of the Gospel of John. And Jesus appears again, it says, this is John chapter 21, to his disciples, but now they're up in Galilee. Jesus actually told them to go up to Galilee and leave Jerusalem. So now they're up there. And by the way, Jesus only appears after his resurrection to disciples, to his followers, to people who had already been with him. I was listening to a man named Dallas Willard speak recently, and he commented that, you know, if that would have been him, he would have wanted to go talk to Pilate and the chief priests and, you know, say, Pilate, could we revisit that conversation about truth that we were having, and just kind of show that everything the Romans and the Jewish leaders had done to Jesus had not been the end, had not been the last word. But Jesus doesn't do that. He doesn't operate like us, of course, so he only appears to his disciples. And that's very interesting, and I think there's a lot to be learned from that, but that's for a different time. So Jesus appears to his disciples up by the Sea of Galilee. And they're hanging out up there, and it says, Peter says, I'm going out to fish. This is before Jesus shows up. And they say, yeah, we'll go with you. So they went out, they got into the boat, and they went fishing at night. I guess that's when you fish. And they caught nothing. But then early in the morning, Jesus was standing on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. And so Jesus calls out to them, friends, haven't you caught any fish? No, they yell back. He said, throw your net on the right side of the boat and you'll find some. And when they did, there were so many fish that they were unable to haul the net in because it was so heavy. Now, this is very reminiscent of another story in the Gospels that had happened before, almost the exact same thing, where they'd been fishing all night and hadn't caught anything, and then Jesus tells them to go back out and try again and throw their nets out in a certain place, and they have a huge catch. So when this happens, you know that the light bulbs have to be going on in their head, and you can almost see Peter like popping up in the boat and saying, it's the Lord. And as soon as Peter realizes that it's Jesus on shore, it says he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he'd taken it off, and he jumped into the water. He can't even wait to row the boat back to shore. And again, that's kind of reminiscent of another story where he jumped out of the boat before anybody else. But he's just swimming and wading back to the shore. He can't wait to get to Jesus. And the other disciples followed in the boat, it tells us in John chapter 21. They're towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. And when they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. So Jesus has been building a fire and getting ready to cook breakfast. And Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish you've just caught. And so Simon Peter climbs aboard and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153. It oddly gives us that detail. That's the exact number of fish there were. And Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. And none of the disciples dared to ask him, what's going on or who are you? Because they knew it was Jesus. So Jesus gives them some bread, and they ate some of the fish. And it says this was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. And when they had finished eating, and here's the part I want to really focus on. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Peter, Simon, and now he uses his real given Hebrew name, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? It's unclear exactly what he means by more than these. Probably a reference to the other disciples, and I'm not sure if Jesus is asking if Peter loves them more than the other loves him more than the other disciples love him, or what exactly, but it's basically this question: do you truly love me? And Peter says, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. By the way, this is the first record that we have of a conversation between Jesus and Peter since his resurrection. And so Peter must be full of things that he wants to say to Jesus, that he wants to apologize, or that he wants to say how sorry he is for how he failed Jesus. But Jesus asks him this question before there's any other opportunity: do you love me? And Peter says, you know that I love you. Despite everything that's happened, despite what I did, despite how I blew it, despite how I wasn't there for you, you know that I do love you. And Jesus said, feed my lambs. And again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? And Peter answers, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said, take care of my sheep. And then the third time he said to him, do you love me? And now it says Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. And Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. So here's what's happening. Jesus asked Peter three times if he loves him, if he really loves him. And maybe that's because Peter had denied him three times. And it's just this almost symbolic chance for Peter to do three times, kind of reverse the three times that he had denied Jesus. And this question of, do you love me? That's all I'm asking. Do you really love me? And Peter says, yes, yes, I do. And then he said, and in all three of the occasions, he says, okay, feed my sheep. And by that, what he's really saying is, you know, Peter, I told you in the past that I would use you in significant ways to build the church, build my people who, when I'm gone, there's going to be a need for somebody to lead and somebody to be the one who's the leader and who cares for people. And Peter, I still want that to be you. That's still the ministry, the work that I have for you to do. And so Jesus is offering Peter restoration and acceptance and saying that, yeah, you blew it, Peter. You did fail me. That wasn't a surprise to me, by the way, but it doesn't change anything that I said before about how I love you or how I value you. And you have meaningful work to do. You have a purpose. And you failed. Yeah, you failed. But nothing has changed this work that I have for you to do. And then at the very end, Jesus offers Peter an invitation. And it's so interesting because it's the very first thing that he ever said to Peter. After he talks to him about how he's going to die, and after it says that Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God, then he said to Peter, follow me. The last thing he said to Peter was the same as the very first thing he said to Peter. Follow me into this way of life that I've called you. Follow me into this changing the world work and ministry and purpose that I've given you. And yes, yes, it's going to cost you your life, by the way. Peter, you remember you said even if you had to die, you would follow me? Well, guess what? You're gonna get another chance to see if that's what really happens, and it will. That's what it will cost you eventually. And so I think that this is a powerful, powerful story. And for myself and for probably all of us, everyone listening to this, that you know how you've failed. And the message that Jesus, I think, wants us to understand is that, okay, that doesn't mean that it's over. That doesn't mean that we're on the shelf. That doesn't mean that we're now can no longer have relationship with Jesus. I believe that what Jesus offers to Peter is what is the same thing that he offers to us, acceptance. A meaningful work to do, and an invitation to follow him, to be with him. And so people that struggle with shame, people that struggle with deep regret about things they've done, things they've said, ways that they've failed, I think it's a powerful, powerful message that Jesus offers life, no matter what. Even when we've blown it. So imagine yourself in that scene. Imagine that you're the one to whom Jesus is saying, asking that question, do you love me? Okay, I believe you. Now here's the way I want you to live. Follow me. Here's what I have for you to do. That's you in that scene. So that's what we believe. That's what we believe here at Rispero, that Jesus offers us life. And that following him is truly the life we were created for. And that it's the best way to live. And if you want to be part of what we're doing with Rispero, if you want to be someone who meets with one of our team to talk about what's going on in your life, let us know. Contact us through our website, rispero.org, or send an email. If you'd like to be part of one of our groups, we currently have 6-week groups for anxiety, another one for shame, another one around the issue of codependency. Sign up for one of those groups. If you're interested in being in one of our classes, we're going to be offering our relational care training in the fall here in Santa Cruz, and perhaps also over the hill in San Jose. And you can be part of that and be trained and then be part of our team, or you can support us financially. We are dependent on the support of people who believe in what we're doing, so we invite you to be part of that. But mostly the message is don't struggle alone. Don't struggle alone. Life is hard, and no matter what you've done, Jesus offers an invitation, and he offers his truly unconditional love. So let me end our podcast with the way I'm going to end all of them, with the blessing that we find in the Bible, in the book of Numbers, chapter 6, if you ever want to read it for yourself. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace.